This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard. Not billiard. What? Not the billiards. It was... Come on, Rudy. What? Come on. We call it the
place to
be. The place to be. Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
This is the place to be here tonight.
Time to play the game.
Party people in the place to be. Uh-huh. It's about that time.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
I'm sorry, Dennis.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Actually, it's being John Akiyama is a better version.
What do you think, Woodley? You can finally tell Grant Owens you found new music.
I'll tell you what, I am impressed.
Channel on the brand.
Get him a rinky dinky dink.
Yeah.
Hey, Nate, man, this is pretty much a highlight of my life right now. I had no idea you were going to be here. I wanted to drive that freaking whole train of my whole youth. You're the man.
And I thought you meant Nate Milton, the Godfather from Kings of Sport. Do you really think that's the Godfather?
Yeah, I did.
All you have to do is break out that fuss money.
I ate the pop.
That's a bit much. You who murdered the dog with the sword.
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I'm just curious.
5 years. 5 years!
We've been doing podcasts. And we have this. This is trash.
Place to Be Nation! Welcome back to the great episode of the one and only podcast. I'm your host, Justin Zero. Coming to you here on this Monday evening. Looking, of course, at continuing our trek through the year 2006. But before we go back 10 years, we're going to stay here in the present, current. And I'm going to bring in my PIC, Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 413 of the Mothership, baby. And it's fucking hot, let me tell you.
Really? It was like 70 here tonight. Really, like chilly right before
we went through a good stretch. The weekend didn't get too bad, but last week, wow, there was some steamy days. But I feel like it's not going to be like that all summer. I feel like we're gonna be okay. Let's hope July 23rd will be okay.
Hopefully.
I'm knocking
on the wood now, and I'm going to talk about it.
Okay. We won't have bugs, that we know. You control that, so.
Yes, well, these moths are fight through everything right now, so. I don't know if they're where you are, but they are crazy right now. The gypsy moths, oh my God, everywhere you go, they're here. And they're saying next summer is going to be even worse, because they're all going to come back for the banging this year, and then they're coming back for the larvae next year or whatever.
So. Lovely.
So we'll see. But
Maybe the nurse will be on break.
Wait, as long as they have nice labias, we'll be all good to go.
That's right. Meat feast. All right. JR, of course, as usual, we are inside the big steel box known as the Vintage Vault, and a show that, again, like most of these pay-per-views in 2006, you're not sure. Did I like it? Did I not like it? I don't remember. Tonight, inside the Vintage Vault, we bring you...
Hey, what is going on here?
Still wondered why you were still here. SummerSlam 2006.
Mm-hmm.
A show that once again you don't remember whether you actually liked it or not. And
I think
you said that a lot about the second half of 2006.
Yeah, on and off. This is one I actually don't even remember. Because I wasn't there. I didn't see it. This was the weekend of the Yankees Red Sox Boston Massacre of 2006, if you remember, where the Yankees swept a 5-game series.
Mm-hmm.
I was at the game that night. It was a Sunday night game. But the weather was atrocious, and it was a long rain delay. And we took the train in, so I think we only stayed like 5.5 innings or something. And the Yankees were up big. And we left to catch the train. But it was the night, so I remember on the train back,
We get on the train like around the same time SummerSlam ended, so I was talking to some people that had gone to the show and getting the results. So that's how I first found out about everything that went down on the show.
Yes. Yep. I probably watched it at Mike's. And yeah, it's got some high points. It's got a couple low points. I got a lot of I got some interesting opinions about this show after watching it again today. So here we go. August 20th, 2006. Live from the TD Bank North Garden, the Garden. In Boston, Massachusetts.
We of course Hang on. Say it again.
What?
Where was it?
The TD Bank North Garden.
Woo! That's my Marty Sleaze tribute, like he does on all the tag teams back again when they mention the Boston Garden.
Yes. In Boston, Massachusetts. Rarely a show we did not go to. You know, there was a... You want to talk about the quality of human being in this building? Yeah. It was the silver-backed yard gnome, Mr. Otellus. I believe the frickin' LaRue Zoo was there.
Oh, yeah, so. LaRue was there.
The LaRue Zoo, Rotella was there, so it was...
No, we're not.
Is this the official SummerSlam song?
Yes.
Oh, God. All right. We've been here. Last time we were there, JR, do you know? Do you remember?
Oh, for a pay-per-view? King of the Ring 2000?
No. The infamous awesomeness that was the 2003 Royal Rumble.
Oh, God, that's right. How did I forget that?
So, the last time we were in fact, I believe, Massachusetts. It's Massachusetts' seventh pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
First in Boston since Royal Rumble 03, and the last one in the state since...
Worcester Backlash 03.
Correct. Backlash 03 in Worcester.
I'm guessing. Oh, and then I was gonna say, was that the only non-Boston one? But DX was in Springfield, right? DX, I think those are the only other two.
Yeah, those are the only two. DX in December '97, and Backlash 03. The only Beantown, the only Massachusetts pay-per-views not in the city of Boston. But we've been to this building, so we don't have to do a history of it. Your attendance pretty good, 16,168. Your buy rate, and this is because just you had so many loaded guys on it, 1.35. That's really good for a SummerSlam. And your announcers at ringside, the voices of the red brand, good old J.R. Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler. From the blue brand, Michael Cole and John Bradshaw Layfield. And from the, I don't know, the orange
purple.
Brand,
no,
the purple brand,
yeah.
The purple brand, Joey Styles and Taz. J.R., give us a report, Les Sautons.
Tagline, of course, the biggest event of the summer.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember the songs.
One was, there were two of them. One was, I think, what's that band? Oh, shit. Shinedown, right? Didn't Shinedown have a song?
Nope.
No, Shinedown did not have a song. That I don't remember. I know one was the Teddy Bears. That was the weird band.
Yep. I remember Style by the Teddy Bears.
Yeah, of course I remember the weird band. And I don't remember the other one. I thought it was Shinedown.
No, it's, you would think you were watching the RSV Awards from like 2001 because it was The Enemy by Godsmack.
Oh, Godsmack. That's right.
All right. Our championship roll call, Edge. Is our WWE champion. We'll talk about that in a bit. World champion, King Booker, 20 days into his reign. The Big Show, ECW champion, 47 into his. Johnny Nitro, still IC champion, 56 days into his reign. Finlay, still the United States champ, 40 days into his. The Spirit Squad, still your tag team champions, $139. Kendrick in London, still your WWE tag team champions, 91 days in. And Gregory Helms at 203 days into his cruiserweight reign. And Lita is your women's champion now. So she's 6 days into her. She had just won it on Raw the week before. We'll talk about that more. One release, Scott. Do you remember who?
Eugene. No. I have no idea.
Really? On 8/25, Kurt Angle was released from his contract.
Duh.
He was being tired of the
I thought he
schedule.
Lasted through after this. Okay.
All right. He had 944 total Jesus. Matches. TV okay. matches, he had... let's see...
I thought Kurt lasted until like October and was off camera.
344 TV matches.
I would say he won.
And this is all Sutton math, so I can't promise it adds up. In any
yeah, way. He might have 344. No, yes. So no. I would say he won 248 matches.
Very close. 226, 190, and 28.
Okay.
ECW had a very famous TV taping at the Hammerstein Ballroom.
Mm-hmm.
On August 1st, of course, that featured Batista and the Big Show in the main event that got booed out of the building.
Oh, it was a train wreck.
Yes, it also had an infamous debut in there, which we'll touch on, I guess, eventually. But very, very famous card. On 8-11, Ring of Honor kicked off their UK tour with a show in Hailing Island and saw Brian Danielson defeat Mark Sloan in a battle of head trainers. Vintage news, here we go, dirt sheets. On August 3rd, it was being reported that Brock Lesnar has been training with former boxer Scott Ledoux, former AWA lead commentator as well.
That's right.
Was he a referee or a commentator?
Referee.
Okay. In preparation for Ultimate Fighting Contest in October, so rumors are swirling there. On 8-4, WWE has agreed to re-sign Jeff Hardy. Speculations that the company are planning a reunion. So more on that to come. Okay. On 8-5, Lita is planning on leaving the company eventually when her contract runs out in the next few months. No negotiations have continued. There's no negativity in the company and hasn't missed any time. On 8-9, the scheduled ECW pay-per-view for December 3rd will not be at the Hammerstein Ballroom, and they say it's due to the crowd reaction on 8-1. So it seems like they're already getting fed up with the old-school ECW feel when the crowds are involved. Mm-hmm. On 8-10, it was believed Paul Heyman put together that show but had no say on the undercard. On 8-14, Shannon Moore caused Vince McMahon to lose his cool backstage. On the midway point, Vince sent word for Anderson to become the babyface to win the match, and that was Shannon Moore's match. On that,
did Sutton miss like 4 cents?
I don't know. I don't know what's going on. That's it. I'm done.
I didn't realize Vince knew who Shannon Moore was. Seems like a guy too low on the card for him to even care.
SummerSlam dark match, Carlito defeated Rob Conway.
All right, that's good enough. All right.
We're good.
Okay. Let's dive in. We open with a feud involving two guys, JR, who has there been anybody shunted faster? And I'll get to this in my points. from the top to the bottom of the card. How did we get here?
We got here because on 7/28, Chavo Guerrero was interviewed via satellite. Claimed he wasn't there that night because he didn't owe anyone an explanation for what he did at the Bash. That night, Rey Mysterio attacked a celebrating King Booker, knocking him off his throne. Mysterio received a rematch later that night, but lost when Guerrero showed up and cost him the match. The next week, Chavo gave that explanation, claiming he turned on Mysterio because Rey was leeching off the Guerrero name and he couldn't retain his title without help. Rey came out and the two brawled until Vicky Guerrero, Eddie's wife, came out to stop them. On 8/11, Chavo vented to Vicky, saying Rey was not a Guerrero and was stealing the name. Vicky pled with Rey to forgive Chavo, and later that night, Mysterio was wrestling Mr. Kennedy when Guerrero got involved again. During the action, Chavo accidentally shoved Rey into Vicky, who yelled at both and then stormed off. So, yes, we're back on this feud, continuing to be played out, still basically tying in the Eddie stuff. Chavo, back to being a heel, had been a face for about a year, almost a year, when he turned right when Eddie had passed away, and still as stale as ever. And for Rey, coming off what he was coming off, not the best world title reign of all time, but still a world title reign.
Mm-hmm.
And now in a feud with the blah, just blah, Chavo Guerrero.
Ugh.
In the opener of SummerSlam. Now, granted, it's a pretty stacked show. I don't usually count curtain jerking for like these big two brand shows at this point, but still, mm-hmm. It is what it is. So Rey just needs out from this badly. We get a quick start as Rey attacks, lots of punching and brawling. Rey dumps Chavo to the floor and hits a baseball slide, but misses a slingshot dive. Chavo hits a slingshot dive of his own and controls from there, cutting off a comeback with a flapjack into the buckle. Chavo slugs away, and Rey's mask actually slips off, and he slips to the floor to fix it. Chavo teases a powerbomb off the top of the floor, but Rey reverses to a face spike, gets a flurry of offense with some near falls. Chavo's absurd over-bumping is just rough to watch here. He forgot how to work. I don't know what his deal was when he changed to this nonsense where he's just pinballing over the place like a jackass. Rey gets a 619, but Chavo ducks a seated senton. Rey takes both over with a hurricanrana. Vicky comes out and stops Chavo slapping him, so Rey dives out into Chavo, but he gets tied up with Vicky too. Chavo hits the three amigos, and Rey hits them as well, and he gets booed, and the crowd just hates the Eddie pandering still. Rey heads up top, but Vicky climbs up and trips him by accident, and he collapses to the mat. Chavo then hits a brainbuster and a frog splash for the win, and a pop, actually, at this point, to the crowd, completely turned around. In ring, I mean, it wasn't bad. Like, the match was fine, but the story sucks, and the crowd is just sick of both of these guys. Besides the stupid bumping from Chavo, I thought it was a solid opener in a vacuum. They've had better. Like, this wasn't even close to as good as their Bash match from a couple years ago. But it's fine. It's just the story just needs to go.
Yeah. Point one, yeah, this Eddie stuff. And you know what? Chavo, you're leeching off him too.
Because
I'd have released you because you're a loser. That's why. You're both pathetic. Shut up. You're pathetic. I mean, God, you're both living off. Even his wife's living off it. I guess she has the most right to. But for God's sakes, it's not just Ray. I mean, they had two. You know what made it worse? They did the whole those two like vignettes of their relationships with Eddie. It's like who gets to keep Eddie's legacy? That's what that's really what the match is like, right. An Eddie's legacy match. It's like, you know what? Neither of you should have it. God. Number two.
Them alternating the three amigos was so annoying. It's like, God, just move on.
And we had to win with a frog splash. And oh, my God, just get a grip. Point two, like we mentioned, like I said at the beginning, could anybody be shunted further down the card? I mean, let's think about it, JR. Have we ever had a moment where a guy went literally back-to-back pay-per-views from main event to curtain jerking? Now, again, big four shows, you can't really be blamed for it because, I mean, the show's loaded. Mm. So even opening the show is not bad. I mean,
yeah,
Rocker.
I mean, it is a spotlighted feud, too. It's not like
yeah, I mean, Rocker's
just, like,
and Orient.
A jobber. Yeah.
Exactly. And you're talking like, you know, Rocker's Orient, Rumble 91. I mean, that curtain jerked, but that might be the best match of the year.
Yeah, but that was still just a low-level tag match. I mean, this is still presented as like a top feud on SmackDown.
True.
They're just opening because they're cruiserweight style, and that's what they did. But
right, right. And point three, we know what's coming with Vicky, so I won't. You know, I won't tip our hand till we get to the to not our next vault, but the vault after that. I mean, it's just the whole thing was just so laid out. It was so predictable. And I think that's why the fans turned on. It was so predictable.
It's very predictable from the start.
Yeah.
From the minute they started Ray's push towards the Rumble, winning the Rumble, the whole thing has been telegraphed.
Yep.
The only surprising point was Ray losing at No Way Out. Like, that was the only shock.
Right. Pretty much. So, I mean, the whole thing's just a mess. And point four, they are both just gassed out of their gills. Mm. I mean, you go back to their match at Bash 04, and they look nothing like they do now. Now they're just all, like, misshapen, and it's dreadful. The whole thing's dreadful. Having said that, like you said, in a vacuum, the match isn't unwatchable, but it's not great. It's all right. And Chavo wins, which may or may not be a shock, but at this point, who cares? It's a waste. So there you go. Chavo wins. Let's move on. We go backstage.
We do. Edge and Booker T, or King Booker, I should say, have a fun back and forth with a face-to-face, bragging over the titles and taking shots at each other and bashing Boston as well.
Mm-hmm. It's a cool shock. Kind of like Triple H and JBL before WrestleMania 21. Two heels kind of hamming it up against each other.
And they even make a bet. If Edge loses and Booker wins, Edge would go to SmackDown to kiss Booker's feet. If Edge won and Booker lost, Booker would be Edge's royal servant for one night on Raw.
Which is interesting.
Yes.
Very interesting. Did that tip their hand on the results, do you think?
Nah, it's just heels doing heel stuff.
Yeah, it's
almost
like
anyone took it seriously. It was like a throwaway thing.
Yeah, probably not. All right. Next up, our first title match of the evening, JR.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the lone moment for Joey and Taz. The ECW Championship is on the line. What do we got here?
We got an ECW title match. On 7-2, Rob Van Dam and Sabu were pulled over and arrested for possession of marijuana, eating marijuana on an Ohio highway. Following the release after posting bail, the two men were suspended for 30 days. Included in the punishment was RVD losing both of his titles. On 7-4, RVD dropped his ECW title to the Big Show when Paul Heyman turned heel and helped Show win the belt. In storyline, Heyman then suspended RVD, blaming the fans for pushing RVD to the limits when Heyman thought he needed to slow down a bit. This was a major blow to RVD's career and finally given that big run and blew it. Now, we have here that Sabu was suspended too, but didn't we talk about last week? I don't think he was, right? Didn't he just have like a fine?
Yeah, he wasn't suspended.
Because on 7/25, Sabu was started to confront Paul Heyman, demanding a title shot with the Big Show. The next week's Show was continuing his impressive stretch, defending the title in bloody brawls every week when he was facing Batista. Sabu came out after the match, smashed Show with a chair, and gave him an Arabian facebuster. On 8/8, Sabu and Kurt Angle competed in a match to determine Show's SummerSlam opponent, but it ended in a no contest when RVD interfered. On 8/15, Sabu, RVD, and Angle were set to compete in a ladder match to determine the number one contender. As the show started, Heyman announced Angle tore his groin and was taken out of the match. Of course, in reality, Angle left during that week. In the main event, Big Show was able to reach up, interfered, took out RVD and attempted to powerbomb Sabu, But while he was sitting on Sho's shoulder, Sabu reached up and grabbed the contract, winning the match and earning the title shot. Rumors, of course, abounded at the time that Angle was actually slated to win that match and challenge Sho at SummerSlam before leaving. So, regardless, Sabu, given the chance, didn't go back to RVD. And, you know, with Angle gone, Sabu's kind of the de facto tough face now with him punished, Angle out.
Mm-hmm.
They're giving him the run. I like that ladder match, too. That's a fun match.
Yes.
So Sho dominate has been a dominant heel monster for the first time in a while. Still quite out of shape, but he's working hard. Still surreal seeing Sabu on WWE pay-per-views. Like,
mm-hmm.
I was surprised, too, how easily he kind of translated to everything.
Yeah, I agree with that. There's no doubt, yeah.
Like, he doesn't feel out of place at all.
Nope.
We get Styles and Taz get their one match of the night. I always feel bad when they fly them in for, like, a six-minute match, and that's it. And that's all.
Yeah.
They had to sit there ringside the rest of the night.
Yeah.
Sabu uses a chair right off the bell, hammering Sho with it and hitting Arabian Facebuster for two. Sho trips Sabu, goes face-first into the open chair, and then stomps the chair to break it. Sho uses power offense, hooking a bear hug and sending Sabu flying with a nice fall-away slam to knock him to the floor. Sabu hangs Sho across the top rope and then chucks a chair into his face with two stiff shots, followed by a springboard sidekick with the chair to the face. Sabu wriggles free from Sho's grip and bulldogs him from the top rope and then springboards off a chair and drives Sho through a table. Sho gets a minor cut on his head but hits a Vader bomb. Sho then sets up a table across the steps in the ring, but Sabu hits a tornado DDT through it. Sho recovers and hits a chokeslam on Sabu through a table for the win. This is a fun garbage match. I like the pacing. They didn't really waste any moves or bumps from both guys. Like, they just kind of hit everything that mattered. I thought it was good chemistry. The crowd was into it. Sabu's been great. Show's rolling along, too. I mean, you know, it's not a match of the year, but, like, it was, for what it was, it wasn't as much of a Styles clash as you may imagine. And Sabu's been a lot of fun.
He has. Let me ask you this before we get to my points. For all of the RVD naysayers, for all who years and years had no problem with him where he was, and then there, you know, let's go back to when you and I talked way back at Unforgiven 02 and all this other stuff. Did this finally prove to the pro RVD people, see, you can't trust him?
No, I don't know. I mean, yeah, he's stupid, but on, you know, I don't know.
I'm just playing devil's advocate. I like RVD, but he is a dope. But literally. But you know, just interesting that we've talked all these years about misuse and didn't get his shot and everything, and then he finally does. And
yeah, it was dumb. I mean, he blew it. But I don't think that justifies saying that they shouldn't have given him sooner.
Earlier chances. Oh, okay. Just curious. All right, point one. With each event, though, I know you said he's working hard, but his eyes are getting all sunken and dark,
man,
and he's going to collapse and die. I mean, he's just looking worse and worse.
Yeah. And it's he's working hard, but also they have him wrestling every week, and as we'll see, sometimes multiple times a week, and like in like hardcore matches, like table bumps and bleeding, and like, you know, he did nothing for years at a time. I mean, like nothing. There were years where he was just like on heat and shit.
Yeah,
and now, when he's, like, in the worst shape in the last 8 years of his career or whatever, 10 years even, they're rolling him out here week after week and just putting him through, like, these rigors.
I mean, really, did he even work this hard in, like, 96, 97?
I mean, yeah, you know. I mean, probably. No, I mean, maybe his first year until he joined the NWO and then again when he first came in. But after that, I mean, he had some years where he just did nothing. I mean, 02 and 03, he worked pretty hard, you know, half 02 into 03, but I mean, this is crazy that they're pushing him this nuts now. You could see the writing on the wall that at some point he was going to hit a wall and he was going to have to take time off. I mean, it was obvious. There's no way he could keep this up.
No, absolutely not. Point two, the match was fun. A lot of garbage spots kind of tied together, but that's fine. I think that's what it needed to be. Sabu is at that stage where, you know, that's what he does. I mean, this isn't 10 years ago. I mean, Sabu's pretty old, too. So it's not like he could go all out as well. So this match kind of fit both these guys, you know. Dumpster spot, move around a little bit. Dumpster spot, move around a little bit. It's fine. It tied it together, and it was fun. And Joey and Taz were good. They sold it pretty well. And point three, we talked about, you know, how that 8-1 Raw was just a complete, you know, shit show. If they wanted to keep ECW / legit and keep the diehards, maybe Sabu should have won this match. Because I think they already saw the writing on the wall that, all right, you got your stupid fucking June pay-per-view. It's time for you know, Vince's way of ECW, and
I don't think so, though. I don't know. Sabu wasn't a guy that needed the belt. Like, as long as they're using him in main events and he's getting pushed.
No,
but I think even as ECW fans, you could see the show was being built to something. Like, I don't know. I don't think you needed to have Sabu win here. It would have been cool, but I don't. Like, you've worked really hard to build show into this monster. I don't think Sabu is the guy to pay it off on at this point. He's there to be a vestige of the old ECW, and you know, he's not there to be the face of the brand. Just let show steady it, and then you find the face that you want to be the guy.
All right. Well, I mean, I think the fan base is patient enough. I mean, you'd like to think that they'll, you know, acquiesce to this, and then
look, anyone that was already like disenfranchised with the idea of ECW was done by this point anyway. I don't think anyone was still watching ECW weekly at this point expecting it to be the old ECW. I think that cat was out of the bag by this point.
You're probably right. You're probably right.
I think it was out of the bag like week two. I mean, honestly.
Yeah. So the big
especially after they ran Batista, fucking
Flair and Taker.
Well, especially they ran Batista's show out there in the Manhattan Center. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that was like a big
fuck you. Yeah, pretty much. So the big show retains the ECW championship in a decent match against Sabu. Do we go backstage?
I don't think so.
No?
Oh, yeah,
no.
We do. Yes, awful segment. So this is where Layla is getting hazed by the divas in the locker room.
Oh, this is terrible.
Trisha's ripping her. Oh, you know, you can't think you believe you belong here. Oh, you haven't earned your stripes, blah, blah, blah. And then laughs and says, oh, we're just joking. And then they throw her in the shower for initiation. They reveal her thong and spank her and spray her down. Just like anytime they have one of these segments where you think, like when I read it like that, it sounds like it, you know, should be kind of sexy. You know, oh, they stripped down a hot woman to her thong and showered her. Like, okay. But it's not. They're terrible segments. Like the overacting was awful. And I love Trish, but stuff like this wasn't her forte. And she just comes across as like really annoying in this segment. I hated this from, I cringed the whole way through. It was so bad. It was so obvious that they were teasing Layla, that they weren't going to do this real hazing. I don't know, it just didn't click, and no one really cared.
I think it was the one time that Ashley kind of felt like, hey, see, I'm not the one getting picked on.
Well, Layla was already better than her, but anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
But no one cared about Layla acquiescing to the diva locker room. It was just a waste of time. It was just a waste of time. It was stupid.
Yes, it was. All right, next up.
It was stupid.
It was stupid. Next up, our second straight year of the red and yellow flowing through an old WWWF hub. Last year it was DC. This year it is Boston. Woo! How'd we get here? It's the first time you've ever used it for the other guy. You're going to play it later anyway. So.
All right. As of January 2011, this would be Hulk Hogan's final pay-per-view match in the WWE. It still is, right? I don't think he's never had another one.
No.
Hogan makes sporadic appearances on TV over the next year, with his final coming on the 12/10/07 Raw 15. He would leave WWE, speaking out about his issues with Vince McMahon over his payout for this match, claimed that the Boston crowd was silent for the rest of the card outside of his match, and he predicted it would be a funeral when he was shown the show format that he was third from the bottom. He believed he should have been in the main event and should have been paid as such. Vince disagreed and told him he's no longer a top guy, and there were 12 top guys. Hogan shot that down, ripped on the current stars, and felt insulted by the payoff. As he was leaving WWE, his personal life, that we've talked about quite a bit over the last couple shows, began to crumble. November 07, his son Nick was indicted on 4 charges of street racing after leaving his friend in a vegetative coma. He would eventually spend time in jail and be the center of an intense lawsuit. And later that month, Linda filed for divorce after 14 years of marriage, claiming an affair by Hogan as the reason. The divorce left Hogan with a lot less money in his bank account, and his body continued to break down, mainly his back, leading to multiple surgeries and a subsequent bizarre behavior. In late 2009, it was announced that Eric Bischoff and Hulk Hogan would be joining TNA to run the promotion under Dixie Carter. In addition, Hogan was also starting his own Hulkamania tour, beginning with a show in Australia. On January 4th, 2010, Hogan and Bischoff showed up on a special Monday edition of TNA Impact, looking to reignite a new Monday Night War. Despite all the personal turmoil and physical ailments, Hogan found himself at the top of the headlines, as always in the center of the storm. Of course, he would eventually return to WWE, which we'll pick up when he gets back. His final pay-per-view record, 23-12-1, went 2-2 at the Rumble, winning the Rumble twice, 8-3-1 at WrestleMania, 0-2 at King of the Ring, 6-0 at SummerSlam, 4-2 at Survivor Series, 3-3 at other events, including one victory under Mr. America Hood. From 02 to 06, he went 6-5. Entering WrestleMania 19, he'd be 1-5 since his return. So he won his last five matches before he left. Not as many as you would think. I mean, I know he was active in a time where there just weren't as many pay-per-views, but 23-12-1 sounds light, doesn't it?
Yeah, what is that? 36 matches, huh? Yeah. Huh. Well, almost every pay-per-view from WrestleMania 1 till Rumble 92.
Yeah.
WrestleMania 8. And then not again till 9.
So he was 17-7-1. If you take out his comeback, that was his original stretch.
Right. And then so from 18 till here.
Yes.
11 matches. That doesn't even seem like a lot. Yeah. Let me rephrase that. It almost seems like too much. He wrestled 11 times in those 4 years. Why does it not seem like that?
Well, 02, I mean, he was on, it was like 5 or 6 alone.
Well, that's because, yeah, that's true. He was, let's see, 18, Backlash, Judgment Day, King of the Ring. Was he a Vengeance? No. Yes.
Yeah, they were
the
tag.
Yep. The tag match. So that's what, 6 matches. No Way Out 03. 19. And that was it. Till, what, Backlash 05? Then SummerSlam. Yeah, I guess it's about 11 matches.
The math checks out. All right, on 6/26, WWE aired Brick Hogan's music video about us. Boys talking down on the sidelines, watching, wishing they was playing the game we playing, but it's all good, though. Oh, wow. Brick, what up, baby? No. No. Okay. Sounds like a Saturday Night Live parody song.
It really does. Like Andy Samberg should be in it or something.
Awful. So on 6/26, Dodie aired that video, and as the video was ending, we were showing Randy Orton watching it on a monitor. The next week, Orton came out and said he would show Brooke why he was a legend, and that if Hulk didn't like it, he would show him why he was the legend killer. On 7/10, it was announced that Hogan and Brooke would be at Saturday night's main event. Orton later said he'd be there to introduce himself to Hogan, but was looking forward to meeting Brooke. On Saturday night's main event, Brooke and Hogan opened the show, as we talked about in our episode a couple weeks ago, with an in-ring promo that quickly was interrupted by Orton. He gave Brooke a rose and challenged Hogan to a match at SummerSlam, which Hulk accepted. Randy left without incident, but Orton winked at Brooke, who smiled, clearly liking the gesture. Later in the show, Brooke and Randy were talking in the garage when Hulk came out, told Randy he'd see him at SummerSlam. Hulk helped Brooke in the car, and as he circled around back, Orton struck and dropped Hulk with an RKO in the trunk. On 7/24, the two men had an in-ring confrontation won by Hogan. The next week, Orton held his own episode of Orton Knows Best in the ring, bringing out Hogan family doppelgangers. He would take out the fake Hulk and Nick with RKOs, plant a kiss on the fake Brooke. A week later, Todd Grisham announced that Hogan had a torn meniscus and his SummerSlam match was in jeopardy. Nothing came of it as Hogan showed up a week later and ran Orton from the ring and then assaulted the fake Hogan, who had made another appearance. Do you remember the torn meniscus thing? Was there something more to that? Like, was he hedging on not showing up or something?
I didn't think so. I mean, that would have been pretty douchey.
Yeah. I feel like there must be something there.
I don't know. I mean, he had two. I mean, it is Hogan, but I don't remember him. I know he used to wrestle with one knee brace, but he came out to this show with two. I don't remember him ever wrestling with two knee braces. I thought he only wrestled with one. But I don't know, for some reason it hit my eye when I was watching the match today that he had two knee braces on. So maybe there was a torn meniscus, but not showing up is pretty shitty. And he's a guy who protects his image, so you know, no one on the, when you find out that he doesn't show well.
He really protects that image well.
Well, I don't know. Well, at that point he did. I don't know, after that he didn't, but
yeah, no, I mean it might have been legit.
Now, I was looking at before we move on, I was watching closely that whole Orton Knows Best. Mm. The girl that played Brooke, was that Maurice?
I don't remember.
Looked like her.
No, we can try and look it up.
I'll have to try and look it up. It looked like a future diva. Looked like her anyway.
Okay.
So anyway, go ahead.
Part of the reason behind Hogan's return to the ring here was to promote his daughter Brooke's music career. Brooke had gained some fame during the stint on Hogan Knows Best, and the family was trying to parlay that into a major recording deal. Hogan thought if he raised his profile on TV again, he could include Brooke in the angle and push her career along. In one episode of Hogan Knows Best, Hulk was looking to set his daughter up with a well-mannered wrestler instead of the type she had been dating. His choice was Harry Smith, son of the late British Bulldog Davey Boy Smith.
Be a gentleman.
Beat your kid, yeah. The episode was clearly set up to get Smith into a high-profile spot, with the idea that it would transition Smith into an on-air role with Brooke into a feud with Orton. The push never materialized when things went a different way. There were rumors that Brooke was going to turn heel at SummerSlam to join Orton, but she wanted to prioritize her music career and not turn heel, so she was quietly dropped from the angle as the weeks went along. And I remember that whole thing.
Yes, I do too.
With Harry and showing up and you know, them teasing that that was going to be an angle. Was this around when he got popped, though? Didn't he get popped for her, or was that the next year?
I think it was the next year.
Okay.
Because he was even on camera?
No.
No.
Well, no, yeah, I don't remember the whole details.
It had to be, I think it was the next year he got popped.
Yeah, because I remember he was about to get pushed, and then he got banged through steroids or whatever.
You be good to my son, you bitch.
I'm trying to look up quick.
Yeah. But she should have turned heel. But this whole thing goes with one of my points that I'll get into after your comments about this match and results and that kind of thing. But
yeah, I don't know. It doesn't say in.
She was another one though who didn't look like she knew how to act in the ring. She like I remember that. I mean, like, when we were watching that Science main event, she like had look at this. She was a
November 07.
She was a space cadet. All right, so it wasn't extra.
All right, so anyway, here we go. Match time. Hogan back on good terms. Show's cranking along at this point.
Mm-hmm.
This was set to be part of the angle, like we mentioned. Really random match for his comeback, and of course, as we noted, ends up being his last one. Orton plays up the Legend Killer gimmick again for this one. The crowd is wild for Hogan. Long pause before the bell to soak it in. Usual opening spots with lockups and Hogan winning for the big pop. Orton quickly takes over and goes through some basic offense, timed with Hogan's comeback attempts. Hogan cuts down Orton with a clothesline and brings the heavy blows while playing to the crowd. Orton trips up Hogan and then goes to work on the knee aggressively. Lots of crowd interaction in this one with both guys hammering it up. Orton misses a high cross body, but ducks a big boot and hits a nice drop kick. Orton hits a rough-looking RKO as Hogan just kind of falls to his side, like Adam Murray taking a stunner. The referee counts three, and Orton starts to celebrate, but Hogan's foot was on the rope, and the match restarts. Orton flips out, and Hogan hulks up. Hogan hits a big boot and plays to the crowd, stomps around as Orton lays dead. I hate that. Hogan eventually hits a leg drop for the win and big celebration. I despise it. He did it to Michaels last year. He does it again here. Where he hits the big boot and then dances around like a jackass while Orton has to lay there selling the kick to the face after dominating the whole match. The match was fine. Not the best of his comeback. It was serviceable. Orton worked hard to keep things moving, but Hogan was really limited at this point. I think his nostalgia, while he gets a big pop here, is diminishing returns. I disagree with Hogan. I thought putting him in the mid-card made sense at this point. It actually lengthens the card up, too. You know, it makes it seem much deeper when you have a Hulk Hogan match, third from the bottom. Orton needs a refresh again, though. He needs something a little different.
I agree with you on all your points, and now I shall add some of mine. Point one, pretty funny. Do you remember when JR goes, Hulkamania does not discriminate?
Yeah.
Sure it doesn't. point two, again, like you said, match was all right. I mean, to Orton's credit, he's no Shawn. So, Hogan could have done the exact same stuff he did last year, but Orton is not Shawn, and not many are, so you can't fault him for that. But the match is what it was. And point three, sorry, for the second year in a row, he should have done the right thing, and for the second year in a row, he didn't. Orton should have won this match. Time to put the overall, man. I don't care about you and your fake freaking straw hair coming out of your stupid...
See, this is... I don't know. I think I disagree with you. I think this is one where, and I know we argued about this big time with like Flair and Umaga, but this is one where Hogan being in the mid card, like, I don't know. It's like, if you're going to put him here, you're only putting him out here to get a win and kind of feed the crowd a bit. You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to use him to put someone over, do it like in a
big. What you're telling me is Umaga's career is more. No, I'm only going to get into that again. Umaga's career is more important than Orton's?
Umaga's career matters. No, listen, this is what I'm trying to say. Is that,
no, I know.
Is that Orton had enough. He didn't need like this win. Umaga needed that win over Flair badly. And, you know, Orton doesn't need this win. This doesn't hurt him at all. And everyone knows it's a farce with Hogan anyway. It's an exhibition. I mean, at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no one actually. He just shows up. Orton shows up the next day, like, and it doesn't even matter. You know what I mean? Like, this.
Right.
And does a win over Hogan even, I don't know.
Worth it?
Yeah, I don't know.
You'd like to think.
I think in 02 it was worth it, in 03, but at this point he's clearly just like a nostalgia thing.
Fodder, yeah.
He's not an act, and that was my whole argument with Flair. Like, Flair's an active member of the roster. He should be putting guys over and working that way. Like, to me, Hogan comes in, he's here to pop the buy rate a bit, have a match, and leave. And I just don't think, I know, if you had put him over a guy like Umaga or a Nitro or a Kennedy, you know, like one of those other guys that kind of needs, you know, some momentum. I just don't think Orton, I think Orton's sacrificeable in this situation here.
I'm just tired of having this guy on and not do anything but be
yeah,
a little,
oh, this match was totally unnecessary. I mean, the build was blah. The match is just there. I mean, it's clearly probably, you know, is worse since like the Undertaker debacle at Judgment Day, you know, as far as like in his comeback.
Right.
It was clear he was pretty much out of gas in the ring at this point. Just, you know, it's fine to have him around, but he didn't need to be in the ring.
No. So Hulk Hogan wins, and good riddance, you and your terrible daughter's singing voice. And like I said, Orton, I guess, could, you know, it wouldn't have hurt for him to win, but.
Yeah, I'm not going to seriously disagree with you. I mean, either way, it doesn't matter. But
no, it doesn't matter. You're
right. It's very egregious. It's amazing, though, how quick Hogan's like renaissance fell apart.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, he was red hot on TV, had a reality show, you know, was wrestling again, got in the Hall of Fame. Like, his daughter was launching the career. Like, he was kind of hot, you know. He was a mainstream star again. He was one of the first big reality stars, like we said before. Mm. And then all of a sudden, he leaves. The stuff with Nick happens. Gets divorced. Is broke. Starts acting weird. His body falls apart. Like, it all crumbled really fast for him.
Right. Well, I read his he has two books. He has that terrible kayfabe book that came out, what was it, in late 02, early 03? And then he did the other book, My Life Out of the Ring, or whatever it is. And that's worse.
Yeah.
Everything's everybody else's fault. Woe is me. I'm a victim. Yeah. My wife beats me. I mean, it was that book was horrendous. It really was. And it's amazing, yeah, how sits here and says, you know, I'm the this, I'm the that. You have the, you know, crappy main eventers and all this. And Vince is like, well, I don't need you anymore. You screwed me, you know, in Vegas, you know, 13 years ago, and you're doing it to me again. So just take, and now I really don't need you. So take a hike. And, you know, what did he think? 3.5 years later, he was going to get back at Vince. I'm going to redo TNA. And that didn't do anything either. So anyway, Hulk Hogan wins. Randy Orton could care less. And we move on. Backstage?
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Melina shows up to wish Mick Foley luck. Says she associates with winners. Foley talks about how he got a different Flair than he expected, but promises he will make him quit.
Don't quit. Which takes us to our next match, which is, indeed.
For so long, you and me been finding each other for so long, and the feeling that I feel.
How have we not heard any Bee Gees on Yacht Rock?
I don't know if they're really yacht rock.
Well, Andy Gibb is. That's a yacht rock song right there. Shadow Dancing. Maybe the Bee Gees aren't. Like, I wouldn't really, if I was, you know, what does he say? What's the guy say in the bump? I'm a Chrysler LeBaron. I don't know if I'd be throwing the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack. Maybe not. But definitely all of Andy's stuff. That's easy yacht rock right there. In any event, of course, hearing Mr. Gibb means we are talking about the 16-time World Heavyweight Champion and the combination. Yaba.
No, Jabba.
Oh, Jabba. Yamo be there. How'd we get here?
And
you know, every third song does have Michael McDonald in it, just to let you know.
It does. My God, he was on all these.
I know.
On 7:10, Ric Flair was cutting a promo on Mick Foley in the ring when Foley interrupted on the Titantron. He said he was done with Flair. There'd be no rematch. Flair continued to try and goad and bait Foley into one, but Heyman came out and challenged Flair to face the Big Show in ECW the next night. After Flair accepted, Show came to the ring and took out Flair. The next week, Foley sent a pre-taped message claiming he would not accept Flair's challenge. Later that night, Flair came to the ring for a promo but was interrupted by Johnny Nitro and Melina. Nitro said they were friends with Foley, and while Foley didn't want to fight Flair, he did want to bang his girlfriend. The two...
Yeah, right.
He did. The two brawled, but it ended when Nitro kicked Flair into Melina, who fell off the apron and injured her ankle. On 724, Raw included another message from Foley saying he'd be at Raw the next week to punish Flair for injuring his friend Melina. The next week, Foley cut a promo ripping into Flair. Flair showed up. After Foley mentioned Flair's road rage arrest, Flair shoved him to the floor. Jonathan Coachman came out and announced that Mr. McMahon authorized a Flair-Foley SummerSlam match, but Foley said he only wrestled whom he wanted to wrestle and that he wasn't going to waste his time with Flair anymore. On 8-7, Foley finally cracked, saying he wanted to kick Flair's ass and get revenge for Melina and agreed to an I Quit match at SummerSlam. The next week, Foley jumped Flair as he wrestled Nitro, and after a Melina low blow, Foley beat on Flair around the ring. The next night on ECW, Flair jumped Foley and busted his mouth open and choked him out with his belt. So, more on this Foley-Melina stuff. The next, the feud was actually Mick Foley's idea. On the Foley's third book, The Hardcore Diaries, Foley mentions how Vengeance was just a glorified bloody teaser for SummerSlam. He mentioned that he had a 30-minute match in mind that would have been somewhat akin to sweeping a sweeping Hollywood epic. Unfortunately, he was only given 20 minutes, and he had to eliminate some of the dialogue that would have made the action more memorable. He also felt he didn't bring his A game to Boston, but rather a C-plus B-minus game. Mentioned something about 3 extra minutes that would have made the difference between an intense bloody spectacle and a hardcore classic for the ages. Also playing a role in Foley's mastermind angle is Melina. Throughout 06, Mick Foley maintained his blog on WWE.com and often mentioned Melina, claiming she was one of his favorite performers. Foley wanted to include her on the angle, so as the weeks went on, he began to mention their friendship on TV. She would play a role here and, of course, the next night. The major issue with the angle, along with the Terry Funk storyline from earlier in the year, was that Foley seemed to really build up these angles in his mind, but when it came time to play out, they seemed random and out of place, especially true for his friendship with Melina that seemed more like a creepy crush than any sort of platonic friendship. And, I mean, you know, in the time since then, Foley's been exposed as kind of a creeper with the Divas. I thought this was really weird and creepy, both his defense of it in the book and the odd placement in the story. Like, it really came out of nowhere. It made no sense that suddenly, hey, Mick Foley, I'm best friends with Johnny Nitro and Melina. Like, I don't know, it was just weird in that she became such a focal point of this feud because he either just really genuinely wanted to help her or whatever, wanted to bang her. Whatever the reasoning was, the whole thing was really odd. And I thought it seemed forced and didn't really fit. But the following night after SummerSlam on Raw, Vince McMahon told Foley he could save his job by joining the Kiss My Ass Club. Later that night, Vince, Shane McMahon, Foley, and Melina were in the ring. Foley told Vince that no job was worth kissing his ass. Vince said if Foley didn't join, he would fire Melina instead. Foley wanted to save Melina's job, so he agreed and kissed Vince's ass. But as he did, Melina hit him with a low blow, turning heel and bringing an end to this brief, bizarre relationship. Not happy with how the angles were handled, Foley took a break from the promotion and was gone till the following March. So, before we get to the match, Scott, what did you think of this whole build, him and Flair? We talked about like the okay finish at Vengeance and how it kind of set the stage for a rematch here, a brawl here. But what did you think of all the stuff, like bringing Melina into it and the way everything else developed?
It was a little weird. I don't know what Foley was thinking or... I don't know. Foley didn't seem... I don't know, for a guy who was in charge of these feuds, he did feel like he wasn't in control of them. It was really weird. It's hard to say because...
Well, it's like he was writing it and creating it, but then they wouldn't... Part of it was they weren't apparently giving him the time, but I think a lot of it just had to do with him not realizing, like, I don't know. No one, like, just because in his mind it was this good, well-developed story, if they weren't given the time or... They didn't put the backstory into it. Like, everything, all this stuff was rushed. Like, all the shit with Funk he tried to do in June. It was so rushed that fans weren't buying the story. Like, I think he was catering to a lot of kind of insider fans. Mm-hmm. But even this went beyond that. Like, no one knew he... Like, the Funk stuff, at least, okay. It's like a tip of the cap to the old, you know, Japanese hardcore fans or the ECW fans. But this was like... No one knew or thought he was friends with Melina, like insiders. You know, it was just weird. The whole thing just came off as forced and weird. But yeah, I think part of it is that he booked the shit in his head and it just didn't play out the way he expected a lot of times.
Maybe it was a good sign that he would never be a good creative guy. You know?
I think he's too creative for them. That's the problem.
Yeah, maybe too cerebral.
Yeah, I think he puts too much work and time into these things when it's just not, you know, I don't know. This is not going to be given the right... area.
Right. No, it is. I think it was a bit forced, and I think it almost went over the heads of. I think Foley wanted to be like, hey, I want a diva to like me. Like, you know, like a. I don't know. It didn't work in that aspect. Now, Flair, well, go ahead and do your comments, but I'll get into what I thought of at least being with Flair and was a good guy to work with. So,
well, here we are. Creepy Foley Molina angle that no one else understood but him and his penis. Foley looked really good wearing his classic Cactus Jack Japan shirt. I thought that was a nice touch. No, mm-hmm. And no sweatpants. He has his cactus tights and boots on, which was cool as well. Big pop for Flair. Foley attacks out the bell and clobbers Flair in the corner, smashing him with a knee and a trash can. Foley locks in a Sako claw, but tries to get Flair to say he quits, but he refuses. Foley wraps the wire around the sock, but Flair grabs a testicular claw to stop him and then kicks him low. Flair chops Foley with a wire sock, and the match spills to the floor, where Foley grabs a barbed wire board and smashes Flair in the face with it, slashing him open badly. Foley drags a wire across and cuts and drills him with the board again as the match starts to get gory. Flair refuses to quit, so Foley drills him with the microphone. Foley unloads the tacks and just slams Flair into them in a disgusting spot with blood just gushing from his head and all the tacks stuck in his back. Flair still won't quit, so Foley drags the barbed wire bat across his head until a Flair mule kick. Flair unloads with the bat, slicing up Foley's arms. Flair tells him to quit or he'll kill him right here, which made me laugh. Foley ends up on the apron, and Flair smacks him with the bat, sending Foley into a nasty plunge onto a trash can in the concrete. Referee calls for doctors to check on the concussion, and Molina comes out as well, crying and concerned. The referee calls the match off, but Flair tells Foley to get his ass back in the ring. Flair pitches him into the tacks, getting the bat all tangled up in his shirt. Flair then grates Foley's head over the into the bat, and it's a bloody mess, but Foley won't quit. Molina throws in the towel, but Flair won't accept that either, and the match keeps going. Flair threatens to smash Molina with the bat, so Foley quits. Again, creepy and confusing Molina stuff completely ruined the flow, which started as a great bloody brawl. It was a classic for the first half. And then as soon as Molina showed up in this Foley fantasy booking that made no sense, it wrecked the intensity, it wrecked the heat-filled bloodbath, and it was just the final few minutes were just blah. And it never clicked because no one was invested in the story. Like, no one cared about Molina and Foley's relationship, so why are we caring? And the ending was confusing. It wasn't even done well. Like, you're just sitting there like, okay, he quit. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it didn't make any sense, any of it. On the other hand, too, as good as the match was, I still find it sad watching Flair do all this stuff at this point of his career. Like, having to fall into this role of garbage wrestler. Like, you know, everyone jokes about the wrestler, the movie. This is what it felt like. Well, at least he's doing it here instead of on the indie scene. But just seeing him bleed every week and taking these bumps and killing himself, it felt kind of gross to watch. Foley's disgusting. He's a bloody mess. He gets a mild ovation as he pulls himself up and walks off. I like the first three quarters of the match. I think it's what they were aiming for. I think the story would have been great if they just had Flair win the match, never get the Molina shit involved, and this capped off their feud from Vengeance. As it is, the back end and the story kind of just took a shit on the first half to me.
Point one, I think this was the inevitable that this feud was going to end like this. And I almost think, as much as I don't think they hate each other like they did. I think it was partially a shoot. I think they wanted to kind of go into each other a little bit, which I think added to the intensity. So I'm fine with that. Point two, these guys really both needed to go all out to put this over, or else it looks like just two out of shape guys rolling around. I agree with you about the goriness, but unfortunately, if they didn't do it, then it would have looked like, you know, those terrible matches from like Slamboree 94 or whatever, where like, you know, fat Wahoo McDaniel and fat, you know, whatever. Unfortunately, if you're going to do this, you got to go all the way. As bad as it looked and as gory and gross, and I've even said that way too much Flair bleeding, and Foley didn't need to either, but, or I shouldn't say didn't need to, but probably didn't have to for at this point in his life. But if you're going to book this feud, this is the only way you could do it. So unfortunately, you either go all out or you don't do it at all with these two. So this isn't Flair Steamboat at, you know, Wrestle War. You guys they had to go this way. And point three, regardless who won the match, they do both look like legends here, though. I mean, I will say this. If you're going to have two guys who should probably never wrestle again, I mean, Foley smart to only wrestle as often as Hogan did, and Flair really shouldn't anymore at all either, at least make it out to be an epic cinematic masterpiece. Based on what you're working with. I mean, obviously, 1989, Flair and Steamboat did it a certain way. And, you know, Flair and Vince at Rumble 02 and, you know, the two matches with Triple H. But here, just based on what you saw with the books and the glorified stuntman and all that kind of jazz, this is the way it needed to be, and this was a great story to be told, except for those last couple minutes with, you know, where it suddenly turned to, you know, Foley's porn.
Well, I mean, it was fantasy booking. It was like he was booking an
literally fantasy booking. Yeah,
that was like an EFED. I mean, it was
yeah.
It was stupid. It was, you know, it was like what we were doing on the fucking message board in 2005.
Yes.
You know
what I mean? Except without the Eva Longoria pictures.
Right. That's what he was doing. He was booking a message board, you know, fake federation. Oh, okay. Now, you know, this old, out of shape, broken out wrestler is going to bang this hot diva. You know, it was so stupid. Like, oh, where's she's going to fall in love with me because I'm going to sacrifice my career for her. It was just, I don't know. It was just really weird.
It was really weird.
I'm sure, and if it was the modern day equivalent would be him like buying shit off her Amazon wish list or something, you know.
You know, it's and Flair. I mean, falling on the thumbtacks and all. It is almost like bad indies. It really is. You know, unfortunately, at least it's on a big stage and it's two legends. And
this would have been fine if it was like a one time thing to blow out the feud. But Flair had done this all year, starting with the stuff with Edge in January. And has gone right through Money in the Bank, the stuff on ECW with Big Show. You know what I mean? Like he's done it week after week. It seems like he's bleeding and getting the shit kicked out of him. It's like it just feels uncomfortable. It's like watching your grandfather getting his ass kicked. You know what I mean? You just didn't want to see it. Like you just didn't. I didn't want to see the 6-year-old man bleeding and getting thrown through fucking tables. So there's enough guys to do that shit where you don't need him to do it. It was tough to watch. I'm glad
it was.
I think it pretty much ends here. I think he settles down soon as just being like a regular guy again. But this 06 gore run of his is just not unpleasant most of the time.
And really, I mean, really, you could say it goes back to what? How much did he wrestle in 05 before Triple H? Did he do much in 05 before Triple H? Not really.
That's right. Well, he had the thing with Carlito and the IC
belt. Oh, yeah. He won the IC belt. Yeah.
Yeah, so you're right. Since the Triple H feud is when it really started.
So, like, from October 05... till now. So it's been about, you know, 10 months. It's just been one disgusting gore fest after another.
Right. And blading is one thing. I mean, he always bled. But the way he's doing it now with the gross weapon stuff and, you know, he's not as bleeding as he gets punched in the head like he used to, you know what I mean?
Right.
Now it's you know, he's getting a screwdriver jammed into his forehead or he's getting barbed wire wrapped across his back or slammed off a fucking ladder, put through tables. It's like, come on. Like, no one wants to see this. I don't even want to really see Foley do it at this point. You know what I mean? Like, let alone Flair. Like, even watching Foley was a little uncomfortable at times because you know what he's been through.
Right.
But that said, the first three quarters of this match was a lot of fun.
Was fantastic. It was one of my favorite matches of the year. We may have to talk about that later on when we work on our scoreboard.
Ruins it so much.
So there you go. Ric Flair wins the I Quit. And he was getting psychotic at the end.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he did really, like... The story was good. If you took the Molina stuff out of there, everything else would be really good. They're angry about the book, and then they bring up their past, and then Foley sandbags him with vengeance. He says he's going to wrestle, and then he just beats the shit out of him. And, all of that was great. And then he ducks the rematch, and Flair baits him into it. And if you just take the Molina shit out, it's a really good feud between two legends, you know? But that just... It just is in the way, and no one else wanted it there but him. That's what makes it even worse. It's not like if it was a WWE thing where they forced it onto him, you know, then you could say, oh, well, they got involved and ruined it. But no, it's him asking for it, you know?
Right.
The whole thing was weird.
It was really weird. And Ric Flair wins. Do we go backstage?
Yeah, just quick. Vince, Shane, and Armando Estrada prep for the big tag match coming up later on.
Why are they together? We'll get into that in a little bit. Next up, another title match. Another belt on the line. This time, JR. There you go. Twice in one day. The World Heavyweight Championship on the line. Give us the deal. The skinny.
The deal is on 8/11. It was announced that Batista would challenge King Booker at SummerSlam. That night, Batista teamed with Lashley to defeat Regal and Finlay, and then issued a warning to Booker, who was on commentary for the match. The next week, Booker demanded that Batista kiss his feet, but instead, Batista stomped on his foot and drove him from the ring. Batista put Booker's robe on to close the segment. In a real-life twist on this feud, Batista and Booker got into a skirmish during a promotional photo shoot for SummerSlam. Booker had enough of Batista's attitude and told him he'd show more respect to his peers. The verbal joust degenerated to a physical brawl that was allowed to go on for upwards of 5 minutes before being broken up. According to sources, Booker actually grounded Batista and controlled things, but Batista caught him with a sucker punch as they were being broken apart. Scott, what do you think, before we get to the match, of the kind of degeneration a little bit of Batista's, like, overall, the way he's being perceived and his attitude. Like, in 05, he was kind of a locker room stalwart. Remember, he's mad about getting moved to SmackDown. He rallied the locker room to be a better show. And, you know, he said some stupid things, but his heart seemed to be in the right place. And now there's rumors that he's kind of got a big head. He's kind of being a douche about things. You know, Booker smacks him around. Like, what do you think about kind of where Batista is here?
I think maybe the worst thing that might have happened to him was the injury. I think he sat home. I think he saw Ray's title reign and went, see, the show blows without me. Look at this. Stupid little midget's a champion. You know, I think things like that. And I think it got in his head, and I'm sure people got in his head that, see, they need you. They need you. When you get back, make sure you let them know they need you. You know, almost like Mike Tyson kind of thing in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
I think he had probably had some bad influence. But I think the main thing was, you know, he sat home and went, man, that show was better with me. Literally, this little dopey midget,
well, even beyond
stupid
that,
Eddie storyline. And I think he felt like they missed him, and he made a point to let them know that.
Yeah, but even beyond that, I think part of it, too, was he was projecting his kind of insecurity about his spot and about his rust, and, like, maybe projecting more because he, you know, like, the best thing about Batista in his original run was the confidence he had, right? He was always cool and confident.
Right.
He came off as easygoing, but he knew he could destroy you at any moment. That's what got him over. And he had that all through his title reign, whether it was Raw or SmackDown. Now, you know, it almost seems like he's uncomfortable. Like, he's not, like, the injury did. I agree with you, but on the macro, that the injury is what kind of screwed him up. And I think he's so just rusty and out of it that it's maybe affecting his attitude where, you know, he's still trying to project that confidence, but he's doing it in an abrasive way because he doesn't really believe it.
And I also think in 05, I think he believed that him and Cena were equals. And he was cool with that. Now, while he was out, clearly Cena has become the face of the brand, of the company to a certain extent. And I think that's making him uncomfortable as well. So I don't think it's just a SmackDown thing. I think it's a company thing, too. Because
yeah,
in 05,
clearly he's lost something in the ring. He hasn't found it yet.
Yeah, he's definitely a little clunky.
Yeah, and this, I mean, it was good that they added some of the intrigue. Some of the real life stuff actually bled into the story, so it made it a little more intriguing. And good on them for being pros and just going out there and fighting. But you know, we'll have to see how it plays out in the ring. Mm.
But yeah, there's definitely something in his head that's causing issues that he didn't have in 2005.
Well, Booker, on the other hand, is on the run of his career.
It's awesome.
Great persona, strong choice as champion. Batista working off that rust, like we mentioned. Doesn't seem as fluid. Slow start with feeling out, trading of strikes. Batista gets a first big shot with a power slam and then chases Booker outside and then keeps the attack on back inside until Booker hits a hot shot and goes to a chin lock. Batista breaks free and it's a belly to belly, but Booker slips out and bashes Batista with the scepter as Charmel was tying up the ref. Booker goes back to a rear chin lock, but Batista fights up again to break the hold. Booker hits a sidekick, but whiffs on another one. Booker hoists up Batista hoists up Booker and crushes him on the top rope and then hits a side slam. Match tumbles outside as Batista gets rammed to the steps. Booker hits a missile dropkick and bookend for the near falls, but misses a scissors kick. Batista hits a jackhammer for a near fall and lays in some clotheslines, was clearly a step off. King Booker gets a desperation neckbreaker for two. Batista recovers and loads up a Batista bomb, but Charmel comes in to draw a super, super lame and soft disqualification. Booker attacks Batista after him. Batista lays him out, and the crowd just did not like this at all. The match was decent. The chemistry was really lacking, whether it was the real-life issues or just in the ring. You know, Batista's magic is missing, like we mentioned. That wasn't clicking. The finish was really bad, and the fans let them know it. Booker was great, but not in this match. This was not him, and, you know, now you're starting to think again, you know, is Booker a guy that needs the right opponent at this point? Like, he's been really great, but if you look at his biggest matches, they've been with, you know, some really good guys the last, you know, little bit of here. You know, a big feud with Benoit, the stuff with Ray, you know, even Lashley can go a little bit. You know, so it's like he's had a lot of good workers in there with him, and now he's got to step in here with a very rusty Batista, and they just don't really get going.
They don't, and I was a little skeptical. That's my first point. On paper, chemistry was skeptical at best. Batista was comfortable with guys that were pretty cut and dry when it came to styles. I mean, Triple H, you know, Triple H, you know, JBL, power guy, Mark Henry, power guy. Like, he knew with Booker, with King Booker, you know, he's kind of a hybrid, kind of like Edge. And I always say that about Edge, and I'll get into his style later on. Booker's the same way. I mean, he's got some aerial moves. I wouldn't say he's a power guy, really. He's only, what, 250-something. Is he a ground and pound? I don't know. And I think those kind of hybrids, I think, bother Batista because I don't think he really knows how to act. Like, there were a couple of, like, power moves that just fell flat, like sloppy. So I think Batista went in a little uncomfortable, number one, because maybe he thought Booker would take liberties. But Booker's never been that kind of guy, so... you know, Batista might have gone into this match kind of like Hogan did at WrestleMania 3 with Andre, where he, you know, remember those all those stories that went out. Maybe he wasn't sure how this was going to go. Maybe Booker was going to take some liberties, a couple of potato shots, you know, which is kind of douchey because Booker's never been known to be that kind of guy. So so I think chemistry wise, skeptical at best. And then with all these other, you know, added pieces to the puzzle, I think it led to being a very kind of choppy match. A point two, I wonder what going, I guess I kind of goes to point one. I thought if the legit heat would bleed over into the match. And again, not because either guy, well, at least not Booker. Batista, you're not sure about, as we've been saying. I don't know if Booker was going to take any liberties. He doesn't seem like that kind of guy. So, you know, you don't know if that was going to help be part of the chemistry. And point three, The DQ ending is crap, and Charmel just really doesn't know what the hell, how to do that kind of stuff. All of her, any matches she gets involved in just looks so awkward. She's definitely not Lita in that aspect.
Right, and it's fine if you want to do a DQ, but why not have the court come in? You know, have Finley and Regal come in and beat the shit out of Batista. Like, Charmel right. coming in, like, tapping him on the back was so weak. Just have Regal come in and paste him with a chair or something, you know? Like,
or, you know, Finley hits him with the shillelagh, you know?
Right, yeah, at least, or even Lil Bastard comes out and then Finley comes from behind. Just something to at least... like, build up the nature of the court, you know, instead of having Charmel. This made him look like a pussy, and he hasn't really been booked like a pussy, you know?
Exactly. And
have the backup get your back. Don't have your exactly. wife come in and tap him on the back and then run away. It made him look soft, especially coming off the fight, the real fight and everything. It could have been a small tweak that made it more manageable.
Exactly. And it keeps the king, the fact that we don't have a belt switch yet, keeps the King Booker character going, and it needs to because it's so good. So good. I like the fake English accent, and, you know, it's just everything about it's great. Booker went all out on it, and he deserved a longer title reign. So I wasn't surprised at the non-switch finish, whatever it was going to be. But, yeah, the DQ just came off so lame. Everything about this was bad. And I was hoping, because I like both guys, I'm hoping future matches are better. You would hope.
Right.
That,
let me ask you this, though, because we didn't really talk about this. Were you surprised that Booker retained? Because to me, it seemed like this was just a quick holdover. Batista was getting his belt back. SummerSlam, big title match. You know, it's not like this was a vengeance or something where you could say, okay, he's going to, you know, it's just a holdover. Like, to me, it really felt like it may be.
The only reason I think no is because it wasn't last. I don't know if they wanted to kind of give Batista his own moment. So either, you know, you don't want him winning it in the middle of the card where everybody forgets, like almost a reverse of WrestleMania 21, or he does it on a SmackDown only show or whatever. So based on card placement, no. But at the same time, I would have hoped that they would think more of the King Booker gimmick to let it go longer than a month. Or a month and a half, I suppose. So I was 50-50. I wasn't surprised, per se, but at the same time, I would have thought that this was ready-made for Batista to just come back, take the belt, and go back to how he was in 2005. So King Booker retains the World Heavyweight Championship, loses the match by DQ, but keeps his belt. All right, so why don't we take a break? We've got two matches left, both with a lot of stuff involved in them. What do you think so far?
Well, better than I thought, but it's been a downtrend. Well, Flair Foley was really good. I mean, Hogan Orton kind of sucked. The first two matches were fine. I mean, it's been more good than bad so far. Okay. This match was not good this season.
No. So when we come back, we have a big tag match. And, of course, our main event for the WWE Championship. But first, many words. Blowing the rules of jazz in my mind. Summer breeze makes me feel fine. Blowing the rules of jazz in my mind. Promotional consideration paid for by the following. What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation podcast network. That's the PWO PTBN podcast network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the reaction shows with good old Will from Texas. We got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
All right, Nation, we are back talking SummerSlam 2006, and of course, hope you enjoyed the cuts from Yacht Rock, as it is the summer of Yacht Rock here at the Place to Be podcast. In and out of all the breaks, we'll be taking care of you there. PlaceToBeNation.com, it's always year-round, not just summer. We'll get a lot of great stuff for you. And I want to take a minute just to make sure you're following us on all of our social media platforms, Facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation, Twitter, Place2BNation, Tumblr, Instagram, and as well on iTunes. Subscribe to our three feeds. You can subscribe to the Place to Be podcast feed, the PWO-PTBN feed, and PTBN Pop feed. So a lot of stuff going on there. The Pop feed has all of our non-wrestling shows. It's tons of great comic stuff if you're a comic fan. So much good comic stuff on there. You get the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular on there, so be sure to listen to that as well, and many other shows that come and go on that feed. On our feed, of course, we had a new episode of Clotheslines and Headlines, Scott, where we were joined by, in no, you know, I guess in order of the show, but the Cowboy, Mr. Roger Morset, had previewed UFC 200, which is, of course, now in the books.
Excellent.
Hugh Little came on from Talking Sheet, and we talked about the draft. We talked about the Cruiserweight Classic, talked about the half-year wrestler, I guess, wrestler of the half-year, match of the half-year. Mm-hmm. We were then joined by Glenn Butler to preview Ultima Lucha Dos from Lucha Underground. And then the main event, Aaron George came on, and we broke down Final Deletion clip by clip. So it was about 40 minutes on Final Deletion there. So for anyone who's a fan of that, be sure to check it out. Also knew Where the Big Boys Play last week, too. So Chad and Parv were back wrapping up 1992 with Stockade. Of course, we have tons of other podcasts rolling in and out week after week, day after day. If you go to the podcast page, you can go to, you can either go right to playstation.com/podcasts or click the podcast banner. You can see little images of all the shows and feeds we have here right at playstation.com, and there are tons of shows, including, because I guess it's now official, it's been announced, the Scott Keith Podcast of Doom coming at the end of the month. Him and Brian Bayless will be hosting. It'll be a mix of current and historical wrestling talk, but we're really excited about that. We'll give you more details as we get closer, but Scott Keith's Podcast of Doom coming soon. PlayStation.com. So, Scott, why don't we dive back in here to SummerSlam?
Indeed.
Time to play the game! It's amazing how you knock me off my feet.
A lot of yacht cock in there, huh, Chris Golo?
Fuck you, Woodling. I'm going to make it 30 minutes.
You know, I wish I thought to put a little DX beat underneath that whole thing.
So, all right. Okay, so this Golo. Continues,
suck,
JR.
Suck yacht cock.
Oh, God. Where's what is it? What's that stupid song called? Dreadnock? No, what the hell is it called?
Dreadlock Holiday?
Dreadlock Holiday. Oh, God. Please don't ever add that. Don't ever play
it. Leo Sayer?
Well, we like Leo Sayer.
I want to see that cover of the album, the one of him jumping in the air. That would be you.
White pants.
Laying underneath you. The feud White. Between DX and the McMahons began to take a major turn. The night after Vengeance, DX parodied the McMahons with Triple H dressed like Vince and Michaels as Shane. They even show and dance to Vince's Stand Back from the 1987 Slammies. Vince and Shane then appeared at the stage with a Spirit Squad, with Vince questioning the appearance of a porta potty. When Triple H responded that they're full of crap, a bunch of feces dropped on the McMahons and the Spirit Squad. The next week, DX was barred from the building, but that didn't stop them. They raided the production truck, caught Vince on camera in the bathroom, peeing on Jonathan Coachman, modified Vince's voice during an in-ring promo, played Stand Back when he exited the ring, and shot off fireworks in his limo when he escaped with a face full of green. It was also during the segment that Vince announced that DX would take on the squad in a 5-on-2 handicap match at Saturday's main event. The match would be a no disqualification elimination match with each squad member who lost to be locked in a cage. DX won the match, and when Vince attempted to free the squad, Michael superkicked Vince into the cage, locked him in, and they posed to end the segment. On 7-17, Shawn faced Shane in a one-on-one match. Shawn won by DQ when the Spirit Squad interfered, but DX got the upper hand with a sledgehammer. On 7-24, Stephanie McMahon went into labor earlier in the day, and Triple H, Shane, and Vince were written out of the show. Michaels was at the show and said Vince and Shane were at the hospital, and Triple H was there too, but the McMahons didn't know about it. Jonathan Coachman came out and said he was in charge for the night and scheduled a match between him and Shawn. Shawn dominated, but at the end, Umaga interfered and beat Shawn down to close the show. The next week, the match was made for SummerSlam, but Shawn would face Umaga later in the show. Later on, Triple H was arrested for having Cuban cigars in his bag, which were planted there by Vince. Later, Umaga defeated Shawn, and Vince would whip Shawn with his belt, and Shane capped it off by kicking a chair into Shawn's head. On 8-7, Vince and Shane opened the show by dressing like Elvis and making Triple H versus Umaga. Later, Umaga would beat Triple H, and Vince hit Trips with his pedigree to close the show. The week before the show, and the week before this show, both sides had a verbal fight to prove who is better. So what did you think of the build to this whole thing, Scott, with the kind of bringing back even more of the sophomoric hijinks with the poop and everything else, and then working Umaga into the feud?
Well, number one, who didn't want to see Stan back again? I mean, it's one of the greatest pieces of history ever, you know? Stan back. I'm going to make a lot of men drop, or whatever that line is. Number two, Shawn and Triple H showed more ass to Vince and Shane than they did in 2 months to the Spirit Squad, which is even more of a dig on the Spirit Squad. And they'll take a beating from a 60-something-year-old guy, but not from five young guys, you know. So it makes the Spirit Squad look even worse. And number three, the sophomoric stuff was just getting ridiculous now. And at this point, I think they should have added some guys to the bunch. There had to have been a young guy they could have brought in to be like a, you know, almost like a protege to DX kind of thing, and they didn't. So they could have definitely used it here, considering what we see in the match itself. So those are my points on the build. It just seemed like they, you know, Spirit Squad, screw them. We could do this ourselves, and they actually –
I'm actually
more
okay with them not adding anyone else, because this whole thing is, I feel like it would be an anchor on someone else. You know what I mean?
Mm.
I mean, maybe they could have turned someone from the Spirit Squad and have them be like a junior member, but I don't know. There's no one young they're going to bring in. Like, that's more of a heel thing to do. I don't know. I just.
It's a good point. But
them,
being a heel thing.
Let them just be out there doing this stupid shit. Feud, no pun intended. Feud's still going. Started in December and reignited with the DX reunion. DX lame humor continues with the pranks and the goofy skits. The McMahon's still doing good heel work, but just getting played out as well. We get a big DX pop as usual. McMahon's come out halfway to the ring and then send out the Spirit Squad to the ring first. And as usual, DX destroys them in just a couple seconds. McMahon then brings out Kennedy, Finley, and Regal as well. And they brawl DX, but eventually get run off too. Big Show comes out next, and he and the SmackDown crew finally turn the tide and put a heavy beating on DX in and out of the ring. Hunter gets put through a table with a Big Show chokeslam, and the McMahons finally get into the ring. And I like to hear whether they all stopped in the aisle and, like, celebrated, and, like, Kennedy was like, "Is that what you wanted, boss?" And Philly and Regal are celebrating. Like, that was kind of a cool heel moment, and it was a good little group that they put together to go out there and beat the shit out of DX. Vince works over Shawn in place of the crowd. Shane comes in next and does the same. Some decent booking here. I thought that at least explained how the McMahons could control this match by having all these guys do their dirty work. The McMahons double team and use some basic strikes to hold on the offense as Hunter tries to recover on the floor. Vince and Shane start to use some good double team moves. We get a handshake double elbow to start it all. And then Shane baseball slides Hunter into a table as he gets near the ring. Back to the classic moves as Shane and Vince had a decapitation device, a heart attack, and a doomsday device for near falls. I thought it was really funny that they're breaking out these old school tag match tag moves. I thought it was a really nice touch. Shawn survives and hits a double clothesline. Everyone's wiped out as soon as Hunter starts to pull himself up the stairs. Hunter makes it back in and starts to mow through both McMahons. Michaels hits an elbow on Vince. Shane and Michaels tumble to the floor as Umaga comes out. Umaga kicks Michaels on the floor and then hits a spike on Hunter. But before Umaga can hit the spike on Michaels, Kane comes out and they brawl to the back. Vince covers, but Hunter kicks out and Vince then slugs the referee. Shane tries a coast-to-coast, But Michaels cuts him down with Sweet Chin Music. That was another cool bump. Vince eats a trash can shot, Sweet Chin Music, and a pedigree to give DX the win. You know, this was fine. It was an overbooked clusterfuck, as you'd expect. Some fun spots, a pretty engaged crowd as well. You know, DX beating 11 guys is kind of goofy, as always. But they covered it off well enough, and they sold a lot throughout. The highlight to me was the McMahons doing the old-school tag moves, and it very much felt like a blow-off, but we'll see. So, you know, worth all the bill that's been put into it? No. But kind of fine for a garbagey, overbooked mess?
Point one, I think the adding of the heels, because that's how Vince plays, I think made the segment even better, having, you know, out comes Regal, out comes Finley, Umaga, like all these guys. I thought it worked perfectly, and it was good to put them in now instead of adding them when they were when the Spirit Squad was part of it. So I had no problem with that, and DX taking a good beating from them early on. I had no problem with that because that's just the way Vince works. Point two, loved Shane's mannerisms. Like we talked about the moves, and then he actually acted like Brett after hitting the heart attack when he did the whole hands thing. I thought that was awesome. So I piggyback your comments on that. That was pretty hilarious. And point three, overall a fun match, but let me ask you something. If this was not meant to be a blow off, think maybe Vince and Shane steal this one?
Yeah, I think they had to win one at some point, and why not do it here when you have 11 guys? You know what I mean? Like, it would have been very easy for Umaga to mow down Sean, and then Vince climbs over and covers him. I mean, I don't get the point of DX destroying the Spirit Squad twice and then beating Vince and Shane here and then still continuing the feud. It's like, what's the point? They can't lose one match against, you know, 11 guys coming in.
Yeah. No, I thought it made no sense for them to win here.
No, Vince and Shane probably should have won this. Unless if it was going to be the blow-off, then that's fine. But it's not, so... You at least have these guys win a match somewhere along the way. And you don't have to because no one cares. You know, it's whatever. But
right.
It is what it is. But yeah, the tag moves were awesome though. That was a highlight.
Yeah, I enjoy that. And Shane doing the whole Brett thing with the hands and everything after he hit the heart attack. So DX wins. Pacing of the show has been pretty good in the sense that not any match was really long. they've averaged between, you know, what, like 8 and 14 minutes? So they've been decent length matches, right, but nothing too long and ridiculous. Mm. So in that aspect, the way they've been formatted the night, I thought it worked out pretty good. It had a good flow in that aspect. None of the matches really lingered too long. So DX wins.
Again.
Again. backstage or no?
No.
No. After a while, the backstage is all just going to blend into one long backstage segment. All right, time for our main event. JR. The WWE Championship. Maybe feud of the year.
Hmm. Hmm. On 626, John Cena was challenging Rob Van Dam when Edge interfered and took both men out, leading to an no contest. The next night on ECW, Edge showed up and dropped RVD with a spear. Edge was due to receive a title match the next week on ECW, but fate and that Ohio State trooper intervened, and RVD was forced to drop his title sooner so he could be suspended. So instead of a triple threat tag match that was supposed to occur, RVD told Cena they should fight again. Edge got involved and said it was unfair for a title shot to go to Cena instead of him, and suggested that the upcoming Saturday's main event triple threat match take place tonight instead. RVD agreed, and it was on. Edge won the title after hitting RVD with the belt, and at Saturday's main event, Cena received another title shot, and this time won by DQ when Lita interfered. On 7/17, Edge cost Cena a match with Umaga. Cena got revenge a week later when he and Ric Flair defeated Edge and Johnny Nitro. On 7/31, it was revealed that Cena and Edge would battle at SummerSlam, but if Edge got disqualified again, he would lose his title. On 8/14, Edge took things to the next level. She opened the show in the ring and showed footage of a trip he took to Cena's childhood home in West Newbury, Massachusetts. He rifled through his stuff and then confronted Cena's dad, who belovedly known as John Sr., eventually slapping him across the face in a great spot, which is a lot of fun.
Yes.
So, here we go. Edge, firmly a main event player now, viable champion. This felt very different than his run before.
Yep.
It feels like he's established now. The would-be main event for WrestleMania that we didn't get happens here. Cena's in his hometown. Seems like he's set up to win. Edge would transition yet again. We got a good build here. They got very personal. The stuff with Cena's dad was a lot of fun. Stip is in place to keep Edge honest. Cena gets an aggressive start, goes right at Edge. Home crowd not completely behind Cena, as you would expect. Cena gets the first two count off of belly to belly and keeps pouring it on. Edge grabs control and drives Cena off the apron into the barricade. Cena beats the count, but Edge hammers away and hits a spin kick to a pop as the crowd seems to have fully turned now. Cena gets a fisherman buster for two, but Edge dumps him back to the floor, trying for another count out. Edge grabs a chin lock and starts to grind, and the crowd is buzzing here. Cena escapes, but Edge cuts him down and heads up top, where Cena meets him, but Edge shoves him off and hits a flying clothesline for a near fall. Edge hooks a camel clutch, but Cena powers out and hits a blockbuster. Cena follows with a quick flurry, capped by a five-knuckle shuffle as the crowd is booing loudly now. Edge slips out an FU and hits an impaler for two. Cena comes back with a victory roll for two, but Edge tries a cross-body block, which Cena rolls through and power lifts him up. Edge slips out of another FU, but runs into Lita. Cena gets a roll-up for two as the crowd is rocking now. Cena hits counters a spear with an STFU, but gets the ropes after Lita stopped herself from interfering due to the stip. With the referee arguing with Cena, Lita handed Edge some brass knuckles. Cena hoisted him up for Edge, hoists up both Edge and Lita for an FU. It tosses Lita off, but Edge slips off and hits Cena in the back of the head for the upset win to a huge pop. I thought this was a really damn good match, the best of the series that they've had so far. Edge's win helps solidify his run. It's a good sneaky heel win too. A lot of fluidity in this one. I like the stip. I thought it made sense. And the fact that it was a shorter match helped them keep things cooking. So, you know, on paper, you look at the finish and you're like, ugh, another kind of fucky finish. But to me, it worked because it's how Edge has been booked and how his character's developed. And I liked this match a lot. I thought it was a really good, kind of an underrated SummerSlam main event.
You could argue, and we'll get into it when we conclude, when we go to our grades and our report card for the year, that this is match of the year. 3 points, though. One of them I'm going to – maybe you and I were listening differently, but I'm going to disagree with you on one of your points. But first one, the feud is perfect. What a build. And Edge is just is a fucking star now. And kudos to our man Johnny Fab for taking the mush, because mm-hmm. That was great. Edge has been just A++++ in putting himself over. And this feud leading up to this show. So kudos to the Rated R superstar. He's been fantastic. Point two, I didn't get the feeling till close to the end that the crowd turned on Cena. I thought for the first time in a while, I thought the crowd was very pro-Cena.
Yeah?
Yeah, I didn't really catch a lot of
posts. They were cheering a lot of Edge's offense.
They did, but let's put it this way. I think both guys got cheered because I don't think Cena wasn't getting – I don't know. Maybe I just heard differently than you. I didn't feel like he was getting booed as much as he had before. I mean, it's bad in the next vault. It gets really bad. But, I mean, we're in a different place. But I feel like the hometown crowd was better to him than the crowds have been lately. They were cheering Edge, but I felt like they were cheering both guys, really. But I after you listen to our vault, throw it in on the network and see what you think. I thought that he got more cheers than he had been. But Edge was getting cheered too. But I didn't think Cena was getting booed as much as he used to, as he had been. And point three, I got to tell you, you talked earlier about Booker and Batista. I was legitimately stunned that Cena lost this match.
Oh yeah, definitely. I was.
And to me, it makes the feud even better. And I think that's a testament to Edge.
Well, it's a huge win for Edge. I mean, it's huge that he didn't drop it right back. I was shocked when they told me in the train that Edge won. I was like, what? Like, I couldn't believe it. And, you know, after the shit finished of Booker Batista, you're kind of thinking, oh, did they do another, like, DQ or screwy thing or whatever? But, yeah, no, I was surprised, especially in Cena's hometown.
Yeah. No, I was stunned. And I think it's fantastic. Yeah, great match. We'll talk about ratings in a minute, but great feud, great match. And I think a lot of people, I mean, obviously it's hard to say now, but I can understand now looking at 2016 how this could be Cena's greatest feud and maybe his greatest opponent. Now, obviously, we'll document it through time as he continues on in his career, but there weren't many guys, even if you look now at 2016, there aren't many guys that got as much out of Cena as Edge did. So I hold firm to that, considering all the guys that Cena will face over the next, you know, 10 years. So Edge, out of nowhere, with the brass knucks to the noggin, retains the WWE Championship in a really, really good match. All right. Time now, JR, before we depart, to rank our our show. All right. Best match of the storyline year. Right now, our top five is number five, London and Kendrick versus the Pitbulls from the Great American Bash. Number four, Triple H versus Edge versus Cena from Backlash. Number three, Benoit versus Finlay from Judgment Day. Number two, Edge Foley Lita versus Dreamer Funk Beulah from One Night Stand. And number one, Cena RVD from One Night Stand. I think you've got to put Edge and Cena in here.
Yeah, I think I'd put that and Foley Flair right below Benoit.
Okay.
I think if Foley Flair had a better finish, it probably would have been top, maybe even two.
Okay.
I can't get by the Molina stuff. It bothers to me too much. Right. I'd put that higher than Cena Edge.
Oh, wow. Okay. So
Cena Edge would be my number
five.
Yeah.
Okay. Foley versus Flair, SummerSlam. Edge versus Cena, SummerSlam. Okay.
And then that Backlash.
Now, are we keeping a top five? Do I bump these other two, or just
keep
them on
the list
going?
So we can...
All right, we'll keep the list going. So there's your top seven. Now we have Foley versus Flair at six, at four, and Cena versus Edge at five. Mm-hmm. But the best match of 2006 is still, from the storyline year 2006, is still Cena and RVD from One Night Stand.
Right, I don't think we had anything here that would even qualify for that worst list that we had.
No, nothing on this show was as bad as Kane Big Show, Kane, or the Brawn Panties. No.
So overall, where do you have this for the year of 06? Not the pay-per-view year, but the actual year. Do you like it better than Mania?
No.
It's better than the Rumble.
It is better than the Rumble.
How would you compare it to like the Bash?
Better. I think the liver enzyme thing wrecked that show.
Yeah. I think the show gets dumped on for being, like, a bad SummerSlam. But I think it's just kind of a middling SummerSlam. Like, it's not great, but there's enough good here to make it not suck. And the bad stuff isn't, like, awful. It's like a C, you know? It's just middle of the
road. Right.
There's, like, decent stuff, and then, you know, there's a couple of really good matches. But there's no, like, some of the finishes are soft. So, yeah, it's just kind of...
It's there.
All right. We needed a better... The DX match and the Booker Batista probably needed to be better.
And they weren't.
Stand out.
Right. Right.
Because that whole section dragged this down a bit.
Yeah. So where would you put it in the pay-per-view, in the storyline season? Right now we have Vengeance 5th, Backlash 4th, Great American Bash 3rd, Judgment Day 2nd, and One Night Stand 1st. It's better than Vengeance.
I'd say third.
It's better than Backlash. It's better than the Bash, but not better than Judgment Day.
No, I think it's close to the Bash. I think the Bash is better than it's remembered to be, but I think it's around the same as the Bash to me, but a little bit better because I have the better matches. The two big matches are better.
Mm. All right, so we rank, as you know, we're ranking the pay-per-views from the storyline season, which means from WrestleMania 22. From Backlash 06 until WrestleMania 23. Mm-hmm. And right now the ranking is Vengeance 6th, Backlash 5th, Great American Bash 4th, SummerSlam 3rd, Judgment Day 2nd, and One Night Stand 1st. And I think you'll still be hard-pressed as we continue on to find a show that beats One Night Stand.
I don't see that happen.
No. So there you go. There is SummerSlam 06. That might be one you want to throw, you know, if you're home and got nothing to do. Throw it on the network and see for yourself if you think some of these matches are better than you think they are. Mm. Or we thought they were, too. So
it feels like a very much... that's kind of a weird show. Like, we have some stuff blowing off, but also we have a lot of stuff that rolled on through this. Like, Cena Edge isn't done.
Nope.
DX McMahon's isn't done.
Nope.
Booker Batista isn't done.
Yeah.
So a lot of these big feuds, even Rey Chavo clearly isn't done. So for what's usually like a big kind of ending the post-Mania summer storylines... We don't really get that here this year. It's a lot of, besides Hogan Orton and Flair Foley, which are pretty much just like part-timer matches.
Yeah, a lot of carryover.
Yeah, everything else continues on. So we'll see. Unforgiven, is that going to start becoming like the Backlash of the summer? You know what I mean? Is that where all these blow-offs are going to happen and then they reset for the
rematches.
Fall?
So we'll see. True.
Because that hasn't really been the case.
No.
So far.
No. No, usually SummerSlam, we pretty much shut the door and then,
and
then we move on. But here, when both belts... are retained by the champions via, you know, tomfoolery. Very rare. At least one major belt. I mean, we didn't have any title changes. Right? Yeah.
No. Yeah.
No, not one title changed hands. Very rare. Very rare. Mm-hmm. So there you go. There's SummerSlam.
All right. It was fun talking about that. We'll be back. Yes. I believe the plan is to be back next week as of right now. Kind of some stuff going on, but we'll see. The plan is to be here with Unforgiven, and then from there on out. So this week, Scott, do we have a main event?
We do. I'm not sure who to have on yet, though. I got a few guys in the hopper, so I'm not sure what we're going to talk about. We're kind of in a weird spot because we may wait a week. We may have a special double up. Might want to do. You know, maybe we'll do a double feature with you guys on Clotheslines and Headlines because the following week is the draft. So, and I kind of want to get into that. So we may skip a week and then do back to back episodes because I might want to get into the draft. So if you see an episode this week, it's a surprise. But right now, I may hold off a week. And then maybe we'll do a double feature with Clotheslines and Headlines when we get out of the draft. So we'll see.
All right, very good. To be a Clotheslines headline, make sure you check that out. If
I am.
Yet,
looking
do.
Forward to it. Yep.
All right, so that's it for Scott. I'm Justin. We're out. We'll talk to you next week. Unforgiven.
Ugh. Can you imagine? So is there anything else anybody wants to talk about as we walk out? Callaway, what do you think? Well, I would have booked Edge better, but those negotiations were atrocious.